Okay, let's go ahead and get started. In the next 20 minutes, I will try to give you a high-level overview of 10 different things that we've heard about in our support group from customers on the common issues that they've seen with installing or activating Office 365 Pro Plus, the 2016 version. Since we only have 20 minutes, you can imagine 10 things, so we'll spend about 2 minutes, so we'll go through it quickly. But you'll notice that on each slide, I have most on each slide, I have links available to you. So when you download the slide deck from the Ignite site, you'll be able to get more information on each one of those areas. Also, if you have additional questions, we're downstairs in the expo area, in the Microsoft section, booth 82 and 83. So you're welcome to come down there. We'll be there till 7 p.m. To answer any questions that you may have related to your deployment scenario or anything specific that you're looking for. We're here to help and make your deployment easier to 2016. So with that, I'll jump right in. So I've been compiling this list since February, when we first put out the deferred channel build for Office 365 Pro Plus 2016 version. So we've gone through since then a couple of DC releases, and then, of course, our next one comes out here in a couple of weeks. On Patch Tuesday, we will have the third deferred channel release. So let's jump right in. The first thing you want to do is, as you start getting ready to plan to deploy Office 365 in your environment, is you want to take a look at what third-party add-ins are in use. And this is one of the most common blockers that customers run into, is if they have third-party add-ins, lots of different departments, lots of different third-party add-ins in use. You want to take an inventory of them. And sometimes it's not very easy, depending on the size of your organization, to do that. And more importantly, you may be collecting add-ins for a number of years, and you don't really know which ones are really in use in your environment at the moment. Some of them may have been obsolete. People are not using them anymore. So it becomes a quite difficult task if over time you've collected a lot of them. So that's when the Office telemetry tools can come in quite handy. And again, there is a link there where you can check the telemetry process. And the telemetry processor actually collects data from your enabled workstations, brings it all into either a SQL Server or something similar, and then does an Excel front-end report off of that, so that you can figure out from that list is what are the top 10 or top 20 or top 30 add-ins that you have deployed at the moment that are being used the most, right? So while you can compile a comprehensive list, but you want to then focus on those and see if those are going to be compatible, and check with those vendors and make sure that there is a 2016 equivalent available for those. So that tool comes in quite handy. And if you go on TechNet, search for telemetry or Office telemetry, you will immediately get some content on how to get that set up and how to get data from it. So moving on to the second one. Of course, you want to take an inventory of what Office family products are installed and what is your plan to remove them, okay? And this becomes critical because there are certain legacy Office products that can coexist, but then there are some that cannot coexist. So you have to plan out on which ones you can leave behind and which ones will become problem sum for you. So as an example, if you have the same version, MSI and click-to-run products, they cannot coexist on the same machine, okay? MSI, you may remember the volume license, the on-prem perpetual product using the Windows installer technology, and click-to-run. So you can't have 2016 MSI and 2016 click-to-run on the same machine. So if you have any apps that fall in that category, you have to come up with a plan on how to resolve that. For some of these apps, we do provide a click-to-run version. So you may want to look at that and see if there is a version available for that. Also, click-to-run to click-to-run, there is a compatibility or conflict there as well, which we are working on to resolve. So as an example, you cannot have a click-to-run version, for example, for Project 2013 and the Office 365 2016 Pro Plus version on the same machine. You have to upgrade your 2013 project to a 2016 version, right? We are actually in the process of getting this resolved. Right now we're targeting the next first release deferred channel build, which will come out on Patch Tuesday of October, which will have this support included in it. And it will be in the deferred channel come February of next year for that side-by-side support. But in the interim, we do have some other workarounds. So if you do have this scenario, you can come talk to us afterwards, or open up a support case, and we can help you walk through that process. A lot of support calls are generated when customers don't have a pristine environment to deploy Office to. So what do I mean by that? They have Office 2013, but they've upgraded the same machine maybe from Office 2007 to 2010 to 2013, and now they're trying to go to 2016, and a lot of times they run into certain roadblocks with a subset of machines, not all of them. And so support's recommendation typically is, if whenever possible, to start with a clean slate, which means you remove the Office version first rather than trying to do an in-place upgrade. So if you see that you're seeing issues with some subset of your machines, you may want to opt into that. And we actually have an uninstaller fix-it. Again, the link is provided there. It's also called the off scrub, which is available for you to use and to remove your previous versions of the product. The next one is, you want to have a good comprehensive plan on which products and what languages are you planning to install, including the app architecture. So what I mean by that is, if your company is multinational and there are three or four language packs that you need, it's a good idea to deploy all of those at once. If you need to have Project or Visio alongside Office, again, it's a good idea to do that deployment in one batch. Because every time you add another language or you add another product to the click-to-run family, it has to unadvertise, not uninstall, but unadvertise the product that's already there, combine all the products together, and re-advertise them. So that is an extra overhead. It takes a little bit longer to go through that process. But if you deploy everything at once, then it's all there and it's happy. Of course, you want to match the architecture. So if you're going to leave some legacy programs behind that may be 32-bit, then of course your installation for the new product has to be 32-bit, or vice versa. So you cannot mix the bitness or the architecture of 32 versus 64-bit. Moving along, you want to plan out your update strategy, and this becomes quite critical in I'm sure most of you are familiar with the two main channels that we offer in terms of updates, which is the current channel or the deferred channel. And the current channel provides updates to you each and every month, including security updates, but also feature updates. And the deferred channel provides you security updates every month, but then the feature updates are delayed to 4 months. You can also want to decide if these updates are going to be delivered through the cloud or the content delivery network, or we, as we call it, CDN, or you want to decide if these updates are going to be delivered within your network, either through a UNC or HTTP location. And those decisions are critical because based on that, you're going to configure the initial installation or you're going to set up your group policy so that it gets that data from the right location. If you're getting all the data from the CDN, you want to be aware of the network, the internet bandwidth within your organization. Because let's say you have thousands of machines, Microsoft puts out an update, and although we throttle the update over about 6 or 7 days, if all your machines log in the morning and start downloading those updates across the internet, it could really become challenging for your internet users. It could actually impact your internet pipe. We have a workaround for this for those customers that opt to get their updates from the CDN, and that's by enabling bits so that it sort of manages that traffic a little bit better and gives priority to other tasks and lower priority to the update process. It takes longer to get the update downloaded, but it works. And that can be managed through a group policy. I've put a reference in there for the knowledge-based article that you can use to mitigate that. So on the flip side of it, let's say if you decide to do updates from within your network, you could also experience an issue if you just put out a new build there and in the morning when people log in, the scheduled task to check for updates runs and it checks and sees that there is a new update out there and it tries to download it. So internally within your network, it could also cause a problem. So you want to make sure that if you're controlling updates, that you don't roll those out to all the users at once unless your network is capable of handling that. So to circumvent all of that, the best tool to use is, of course, Configuration Manager, because Configuration Manager can manage those updates for you. You can download the updates, you can deploy them, and it'll do the management by distributing them through the distribution points that you have set up. You can also use Configuration Manager to actually deploy or install the product in the first place. So, and we are continuing to build more tools in there for better update management, better deployment, more customization, things like that. So if your company has a System Center available, this may be your best bet for both installation and updating. So for number five, of course, you want to plan how to deploy, and I mentioned System Center. Of course, for a smaller company, they can choose to deploy directly from the Office portal, which is totally uncustomized version. So people just log into their portal, click on a link to download and install, the installation happens, it defaults to getting updates from the cloud, it defaults to getting updates every 4 months for features and monthly for the security updates. So totally hands off, product is on the machine, nothing is required by the admin other than to give the user the license to install. So that's the least amount of management from the admin perspective. On the other side of it, you can use the Office deployment tool, which allows you several different customizations where you can decide if the updates will be local, from the cloud, if Office will be installed from the cloud or it'll be installed locally from a local source, what kind of logging you will have, what kind of UI will the user see. All of those customizations can be done through the deployment tool. And of course, this deployment tool can also be used in conjunction with the System Center Configuration Manager. So you can use the tool to actually create a custom package, and the setup exe that actually distributes the software can then be, that command line can be sent out through the config manager. And so there is some details here at this link on how to go about doing that. There is also a special consideration with RDS. Whenever you're using a remote desktop services, this is when multiple users are trying to connect to one server and run multiple sessions of Office. Right out of the box, click to run, if you were to install it like any other workstation, is going to install on that machine for just the console user and not for remote desktop service. So there is a property that you have to enable called the shared computer activation, and you do that through the Office deployment tool. Once you enable this property through the Office deployment tool, or you can actually even write a registry key that's associated with the shared computer activation, and that server, that RDS server, then becomes capable of servicing multiple users at the same time via the activation. The other requirement there is that if you enable this, this can actually allow multiple profiles to access the Office service totally independent of each other. So if I was to log in through this service and I have an Office 365 account, I'm going to get my most recently used file list in the applications, my custom dictionary, my Outlook profile, et cetera, right? And I log off and another user logs in, they will get their profile loaded. So it's actually does a really good job in that. And that activation or that usage does not count against the five activations that we typically provide for your workstations, right? So this is totally keyless activation. All you have to do is give them a subscription and they're ready to go. So for those that don't have a subscription, when they launch Office, they'll be asked to activate and they'll be given a reduced functionality mode, which is basically read and print interface through that. So again, more information on that is in here at this link. So the next one, proxy and firewall play a critical role, especially if you're going to have users download from the cloud. But they also play a critical role since users still have to activate against the cloud. So they still have to go to the Microsoft activation servers, get a key downloaded to their workstation. And proxy or firewall can become a roadblock in that regard. And I feel we have done a pretty good job in documenting the URLs and ports that you have to keep open for that communication to occur seamlessly. I think the most common issues that we see in this regard is one particular URL or a certain port has not been enabled through your firewall or proxy. And therefore, that traffic gets blocked and you get an activation error or you get a download issue. So make sure to look at this list of different URLs. The other thing to remember there is there is a scheduled task that actually is called a heartbeat task, activation heartbeat, and it's It runs every time you boot the system, or it's got certain frequencies, certain occurrences, I think every so many days, et cetera. And that scheduled task, by default, runs under the system context. And all it's doing is it's making a call to the activation server and saying, can you renew my activation? Because the activation is issued for 30 days at a time. So it just keeps that activation current. So every few days, it'll make that request. It hears back, it resets the counter to 30 days. So you don't get really close to the end or 7 or 6 days and start getting notifications that you haven't been activated. That also works for customers that may not be using Office all the time. Because that activation call actually also occurs when a user launches an app, it makes that call to get that heartbeat sort of reset. But let's say if there is a user that's not going to use Office for 5 or 6 weeks, they're on leave or on vacation or whatever, we didn't want that customer to come back to their desktop, launch Office, and get an activation prompt saying your license has expired. So we had built this scheduled task in the background where this call is made. Now, that call is actually made under the system context. So if your proxy and firewall only allows the logged-in user to get through but not the system account, then the system account's calls are going to fail silently and you won't know about it until that user comes back and tries to launch and they'll get an activation prompt. So the terminal server is a little bit different, and the reason it's different is because it's not actually installing a key on the machine. All it's doing is going to the activation server and saying, is this person authorized for a license? And it says yes, and it gives them a 7-day token that is saved in their profile. And so for the next 7 days, they will not have to re-enter their credentials, and when it comes down to 3 days, it actually makes a call in the background to renew that 3 days to 7 days again. So technically, if they are on that machine once every 7 days, they will not be required to activate. So it works a little bit different there. So going back to this, the point that I'm making is make sure your system account has that access also. Or understand that if you decide for security reasons not to allow that, which is fine. For security reasons, you may choose not to. If for just those users that go several weeks without launching the Office product, they may see certain activation prompts, okay? But it's as simple as typing in your credentials. Now, there is one other way to work around that, which is if you are using single sign-on, then the user will never see that interaction because they launch Office, in the background, it'll pick up their Windows credentials, send that to the activation server. Activation server will respond. Everything will be happy. The UI will not show anything. Okay. So this is sort of an interesting one for those that are currently in an on-prem situation. So you have a volume license, let's say, of Office 2013 or 2016, you have it deployed throughout your entire organization, and now you're gradually trying to make the move from on-prem to the cloud. So going from the perpetual product to the 365 product. Typically, the way customers embrace this is they will deploy a small number of users and start testing Office 365. But in order to do that fully, they have to federate their domain into Azure AD. And that's precisely where the problem comes in. So you have 2013 or 2016 on-prem, you federate your domain, right? What that does is it actually, the users that you add, it's now getting their profile from the cloud rather than from your on-prem ADFS servers. And that happens for your entire domain. So even those users that are not yet in the cloud are now getting their profiles from the cloud. So typical things that people see on their desktop is they will see that their most recently used list is disappeared because the cloud profile didn't have that data, right? They will see sometimes a yellow bang or exclamation point next to their name in the top right corner where their name is, right? So those are sort of telltale signs of the fact that this user doesn't really have a profile in Azure AD after the domain was federated. So everybody who does get an account in through the portal is happy, but everybody else is not, right? So if you are a company that is migrating in that manner, we actually have a KB article right there that talks about the steps that you need to take for everybody that is remaining on-prem. And as they're going to be moved from on-prem to the cloud, that registry setting will have to be removed. So you add a registry key, you keep it there until that person is moved. When that person is moved, you delete that registry key and everything will be happy. So we've seen that with our Fast Track team, a lot of customers as they migrate gradually, very large companies, 30,000, 50,000, 100,000 seats, they're migrating over. Of course, they can't do that all overnight. Sometimes it takes them months to get everything migrated. So this is sort of an interim step that you have to take to make sure that your on-prem users don't get frustrated with their stuff going missing. The last two is more related to logging. So if you see installation issues and you happen to call support, support is going to ask you to collect some logs so they can see what's going on. So just sort of get you ready to have that conversation with your support engineer. We write logs in two locations, the temp folder and the Windows temp folder. So initially when you launch setup, it actually goes through a user mode process. So at that time, the logs are written to the temp, and then it switches context into the system account. So the system account actually writes logs to the Windows temp folder. So if you're looking for logs, you can look at that location. They typically start with the machine name, followed by a date and a log number, okay? So look for those. And if you're curious in looking at those logs, open them up in Notepad, and your support engineer, the first thing they're gonna look for is the keyword unexpected. So as you can see, I have it highlighted there, the keyword unexpected. So if you're curious what the failure was, open one log at a time, do an edit find, search for the keyword unexpected, and they'll probably give you some information on what caused the failure. You could even take that part of that line, some keywords from that line, put it in a search engine, and maybe you'll even find the issue, okay? So if you're curious, you wanna do self-help, there is a tip. I mean, that's where the support engineers will start. On the activation front, we have a really good tool. Of course, you have the NetMon and you have the Fiddler traces, which the engineer will ask for. But there is this tool called the Test Connectivity tool. It's on testconnectivity.microsoft.com. All you do is go to that tool. There is an Office Client tab. Go to the Client tab. There is a little tool that you download, and you run that tool. And what it does is it asks you for your login credentials. So you put in your login credentials, and based on that, it actually makes the whole round trip call to the download servers and to the activation servers and back. And whatever failures occur along the way, it logs those. And in the log, you will see every call that it makes with a red, yellow, or green status next to it. So you are almost able to check that log and find anything that's yellow or red and see where the issue is. So again, if you wanna do some troubleshooting on your own, look at those, but you can also export those logs into an HTML, email it to your support engineer that's helping you, and they can guide you on how to get around it. Most of the times we find that there may be a DNS issue or there is a a proxy that's not letting a certain traffic through. So Fiddler in combination with these logs pretty much help us resolve the issue for you. So those are the top 10. I'm happy to take any quick questions right now, or you're welcome to catch me after this or come down to our booth. So, yes.
And there's supposed to be a fix coming out in early October before it was kind of hot. Anything about that?
Yeah, so we have a new deferred channel build coming out in October, second week, and I am almost certain that that fix is in there. Yeah. So that's our deferred channel 3 release that's coming out patch Tuesday of October. Yep. And there is a few other things that we're currently working on with the shared computer activation. To give grace period to those that don't have a subscription. So right now we just to boot you out. Yeah. So we're sort of building some of that in there. Yeah. So the question is, language pack downloads are very large. And actually what we have done now is we've addressed that. So if you download the latest Office deployment tool, for the product ID, you use the keyword language pack. And then you specify the languages you want. And it's depending on the language, it can be anywhere from 100 to 300 megs. Yeah. But you use the product ID language pack. And the benefit of that is, regardless if you're deploying a Pro Plus product or business product or whichever, the language pack works with any product. So that's also an advantage because customers were saying, why do I have to download a language pack for Pro Plus and one for business and so on, right? So now the language pack keyword only downloads the language files, smaller download, you can combine them. And the new thing that we've also introduced is a local installation source. So where you can download all the languages in one source and then decide based on your geographic location on a subset of those languages to send out based on your configuration XML. Previously, you couldn't do that. You had to take the whole language set and send it to all locations. So if you look up local installation source, you will find that information there. So good question. Good question. So the question is around a volume license for Visio and Project, and how do you make that work with the Office 365 product? The 2016 version of Project and Visio volume license, we also have a click-to-run version for it. So the way you mix them is you actually download a special Project and Visio product with the click-to-run version that still activates using your volume license key. So you can either set up a KMS host to activate those, or you can use a Mac key. And they can coexist because they're both click-to-run. Yeah. So there is, in the Office deployment tool, if you look at the product IDs, we have 4 new product IDs, 2 for Visio, standard and professional, and 2 for Project, standard and professional. So you download those instead of the ones that are available on the VLSC site.
And we can use a Mac key with that now?
You can, okay. So there is an issue with the Mac key. You can use the Mac key. The only thing you have to do is call us, and we will issue you a Mac key specifically for your organization. So you call us and you say you're using this Click to Run 2016 and you need a Mac key. The Mac key that's on the VLSC site does not work with that, but we can issue you one for your company to use. Absolutely, yes. Yes. That's correct. Yeah, for Project and Visio, yes. The Office deployment tool, just like you specify the product ID for Pro Plus Retail, there is product IDs for Project and Visio in there. So if you just look up the reference for the Office deployment tool, there is a link there that points you to the list of product IDs that are supported by it. And you basically use one of those.
So a shared activation
yeah.
computer.
Okay.
Project's gonna expire, gives a week, I guess, or however many days mm-hmm. it is, and you can't make that go away.
Okay. So good one. I think there is some corruption with their identity key, because that's where we save the login information. And there is a blog, if you come down to a booth, I'll show you. There is a blog which gives you specific registry keys to delete for that user.
Oh, okay.
And that'll reset. It'll make it like they've never had, yeah, they've never activated the product.
Nice. Hey, I have one question. So, I'm a little program. This is like towards the Windows 10 and the Mac key. So, I'm a little confused because of the documentation. It doesn't clearly state that the Mac key for Windows 10 if you get the volume license customer, where it says server 2012 R2 with Windows 10.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know the answer to that because I'm on the Office side of things, so we're so siloed that.
Yeah, okay, because it's kind of the same deal. Right?
Yeah, where so at the Expo,
I'm
we.
If I set up that Mac server and it doesn't support legacy versions, I'm screwed.
Yeah, I would suggest at the Expo there is a Windows 10 booth, and maybe asking them that question.
In the Microsoft
area. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.